Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. Lake Tahoe. Last wildfire season, we spent a lot of time at Lake Tahoe, worried about South Tahoe especially, and then about the bears who were occupying the kitchens of Lake Tahoe after people had grabbed their children and left. The flames were smacking right up against the driveways. And then the bears moved in. And then the story of Hank the Tank. But now, Jeff, a very good evening to you. Hank the Tank is legendary. So are all the other bears who live in the Lake Tahoe region, waiting for wildfires again so that they can raid the kitchens. However, you tell me that Lake Tahoe is turning even stranger with snow in June. Is this something unusual? I hope it is. Snow in June is associated with volcanic activity in 1815.
Good evening, John. It is unusual, but it has happened before. It's happened before in our lifetime, so it's not a, you know, even once in a type of thing. But certainly in these days of social media, it gets much more play. So you have thousands, tens of thousands of people around the lake for the summer season, and they see the snow coming down, and it's just these very strange flurries. It's, you know, Lake Tahoe's at altitude, and they get strange weather systems plow through there. The good thing for the people in Tahoe, at least the people with the tourist businesses, is the snow didn't stick really. It melted almost as soon as it hit the ground. But still, quite strange. Here we are in late March now, and we've got snow coming down in California. At least people scratching their heads, that's for sure.
Late June, Jeff, okay? We're not doing a time zone thing here. So it's late June, and we go to snow in Tahoe, and we're heading now to drought in California. These things don't go together, Jeff. There's a mismatch here. Now, you have told me about water conservation in California. You're in Orange County. Have you seen any new announcements about conservation?
We haven't seen any new announcements in Orange County or other parts of Southern California, but they're already talking about it in Los Angeles, already starting to impose some restrictions. You're certainly getting it in the northern parts of the state where they're feeling it a bit more. But people do know that the restrictions are going to be very, very tight, and this is going to be a very difficult period for everybody in the state. We're going to start with gradual restrictions, rationing, and then it's going to get harder from there. So at first, you're going to talk about maybe a 30% limiting of water. But people are really worried because they do foresee the day when it's going to go to 50 or even more than 50% of water cutoffs.
Sacramento Bee is reporting that there are 4 million acres of lawns in California. That seems a lot. Okay, so what are you going to do about your lawns? We've talked before about functional lawns, dysfunctional lawns. Are they moving into the idea that lawns are to be banned in California?
They are moving into that direction. It's already happened in parts of Vegas and in Arizona, but where they have a lot of xeriscaping or natural just rocks and succulent plants, that type of thing. That's where California is heading. People have been pushing that for quite a while, getting people to understand, especially in Southern California, that we live in a desert climate here, actually. It's not people think of it as being very lush, but it really is a desert climate here. And so they've been pushing for more responsible water usage over the years, not having lawns, not having these big backyards, instead just having ornamental xeriscaping, having it look very natural and not wasting all that water.
The drought is one way of talking about wildfire season. So we're going to go right to wildfire. We're looking at PG&E and its preparation so that it won't have another Dixie Fire incident. As I recall, they were slow to respond to the first alert of the Dixie Fire. 10 hours is my memory, Jeff. And they're saying that they've improved their protocols. What have they done?
What they want to be able to do is have safety settings that turn off power to a circuit within a tenth of a second of what they call a fault, or when it's something like a tree branch falls onto a line. what has happened in the past in some instances was a tree branch would fall onto a line that was live, spark a fire, and it would just burn until, you know, power was cut off to a certain area of the grid. Or it would, you know, transmission lines would be down and the same type of thing would happen. What they're trying to do is get ahead of these massive brush fires that burn for several hours without being noticed. And when it gets to that point, it's too late. It's already become too big. They can't get enough firefighters to the area in time, and it just grows bigger and bigger and bigger. And so you have these massive wildfires like the ones last season that burned up close to 1 million acres in a single wildfire.
I was reading about a 1949 wildfire. I believe it was in California. It was somewhere in the West. Smoke jumpers, very daring young men. And in this one instance, a number of them died when a wildfire turned on them, and they ran for it. But their discipline was so overpowering that they didn't dump their equipment. So they ran with the equipment on their backs and didn't make it. I believe one or more of them survived. And the way he did it, Jeff, was amazing. He slammed down into the meadow they were running across. And then he cleared a line around him where he dug out all that could burn around him and then burrowed into the ground in the middle of this. A fire break. He built a fire break around him and the fire went over him, telling me that these fires are not anything I've ever experienced. They're moving as if they're a living creature. You've talked about this, Jeff, driving through wildfires in the hills on either side of the road. Do they appear to be alive sometimes?
They do. It's a very strange feeling. I've been in the middle of them where they're actually swirling around you or within 100 yards of you. And 100 yards might seem like a distance, but with the erratic fire behavior sometimes, the way it pushes and creates wind, and just the monstrous sound that it makes when you're enveloped or nearby these big fires, it really does sometimes feel like a wild animal or a big organic type of creature. And firefighters and others will tell you the same thing. Then they'll nickname it the beast or, you know, the wild animal or something like that. It does have that feeling that it takes on a life of its own beyond just being a fire. It's a very scary experience, very humbling. If you want to feel small, be around a major wildfire because you're just a dot against this massive conflagration.
Here it is, but late June. Is this wildfire season now or are we early?
It's wildfire danger, but the real big part of the season, the peak part, is going to be when we hit August, September. And that's when we get not only the heat, the hottest part of the summer typically, but also the winds, the Santa Ana winds, a lot of the fuel, that's the fuel bed that's there because the trees and the nettles and the leaves and everything on the ground, they'll have built up and dried up over the season. And that's when you have kind of that perfect storm, the perfect opportunity for the biggest fires. That's when we have these ones that turn into 500,000 or more acres burning through the West.
We go to San Francisco, the Bay Area, where Jeff is carefully reporting on after Chesa Boudin, the San Francisco District Attorney with an unusual approach to law enforcement, now recalled by vote. And what we have is a city that is paralyzed, apparently, by criminal activity, by dysfunction, and by people who are helpless. The homeless are helpless. So we begin with a report about the Warriors are a very powerful basketball team, correct, Jeff? And they win every year.
It sure feels that way.
All right. So they had a parade to celebrate their victory on Market Street. And what did they see? What was around them?
What we saw were boarded up stores, broken windows, graffiti, all sorts of vandalism, broken infrastructure, and streets littered with trash and human waste. In addition, you had a large number of people who were either on drugs or alcohol or dealing with mental illness, and a large number of homeless all along the street. You know, if this is supposed to be like down Fifth Avenue or Broadway in New York or down, you know, the Miracle Mile in Chicago, these places that are historic lanes of traffic where they have parades. And Market Street is that in San Francisco. That was the place where they had post-World War II parades, victory parades, and welcome home parades, those type of things. And instead, it's become, a route of or a boulevard full of misery. And this was all on display as the Warriors, you know, transited along it. and tried to celebrate with the people of the Bay Area. That was the background. That was what everybody in the rest of the world saw if they saw it on TV.
In the meantime, we go to Walnut Creek, a Macy's in Walnut Creek at Broadway Plaza. Where is Walnut Creek?
Walnut Creek is across the bay from San Francisco. It's the East Bay. That's Alameda County over there. And Walnut Creek has a distinction or is distinguished by having a rather well-to-do community there. The schools are great. The shopping is fantastic. The surroundings are beautiful, you know, parks and the homes and all that. But it's been a target for the smash and grab gangs, these rings, criminal rings, that have come into some of the very tony shopping centers and hit jewelry stores and high-end retailers and walked out with, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of goods over the past year or two. It's really been taking its toll on retailers throughout the Bay Area. And, you know, so many people in Walnut Creek thought they were safe being over in that part of the Bay. Alas, it's not the case.
These are hooded masked men. I thought this was several months ago. I thought they solved this with policing and preparation. It doesn't look solved at all.
It's not solved. You know, what they did is they arrested some people here and there, and they managed to shut down some of the fencing or resale operations. But there are many gangs, many criminals, and, you know, they're just looking for opportunity for targets. And they go where the money is, just like the lions go to the watering hole. These criminals go to the place where the big money objects are.
So Chesaboudin's exit hasn't changed the environment. You have Market Street overrun with dysfunction and Walnut Creek a haven no longer. True?
I'd say that's true. I'd say it's not just Walnut Creek either. There are some other very nice middle class and upper class communities that are feeling this throughout, not just the Bay Area, but all of California. This is hitting voters hard right now.
Jeff, this is Gavin Newsom's base. He's the governor. It's Nancy Pelosi's home. She's the Speaker of the House. What? Does this make any sense?
It's strange. Interesting, too, because Gavin Newsom went on Truth Social, Donald Trump's social media platform the other day, and he used the opportunity of signing up to say, hey, look, this isn't the problem in our states. This is a problem in the red states, the Republican-led states. Yet if you go to Los Angeles, Sacramento, San Diego, you know, any of the big cities in California, they'll tell you the same thing, that crime is out of control. There's nowhere where voters feel like crime is being handled the right way.
All right, two positive stories about robots. One about big rigs in the West, the other about tractors on farms. Are we looking to replace farm workers because you can't find any? Are we looking to go for technology that is in demand? How do you see these stories, a big rig that drives itself and a tractor that drives itself?
What we're talking about in both these instances primarily addresses labor issues. It also addresses efficiencies because, you know, you never have to worry about, you know, lines being handled in a straight manner or, you know, delivery routes being attended to the right way. This has been a concern with people in the trucking industry for some time, and this will have a big impact on the overall labor market because so many men in this country are truck drivers. And when you're talking about agriculture has been moving toward a more high-tech approach to farming, say, for quite some time. I mean, several decades, they've been working with, say, GPS and improving the way they farm using things like GPS and the types of machines they use and weather monitoring stations. Farming is no longer the province of just people with pitchforks and tractors. It's a very high-tech operation now, very computer savvy. And it's interesting, the people that are coming out of ag schools, the colleges around the country, they come out being just as much about computer operations as they are about farming operations.
And finally, Mendocino, California, apparently is a tourist attraction now because you can see with the price of gasoline. You sent me a photograph of this, Jeff, but I don't believe it. Are you certain these numbers are accurate in California?
They are. Up in Mendocino, they're talking about soon being up over $10 a gallon. Mendocino, California is remote. It's up there on the Northern California coast. It's not near any major urban areas. So getting fuel out there is a costly proposition. But, you know, they know they have people over the barrel, too. They always have. It's always been more expensive to buy gas out in that part of the world. because once you're out there, there's not many places you can go. They've been talking about gas going over $10 a gallon there, probably being the first place in the nation. It's not that far off.
And what have you got in Orange County right now? What are the round numbers?
Right now, on the high end, you're basically at $6.99 a gallon. On the low end, about $6.49, $6.59 a gallon. And remember, diesel, all-important diesel, is probably 50 cents to a dollar a gallon more. And people need to keep that in mind when they hear all those other prices. When diesel goes up, the cost of your groceries go up, the cost of your transportation goes up. This country really relies on diesel more than other forms of gas in many ways.
Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.